This is the American Soccer News Network.
Welcome back to another edition of Midnight Ride on American Soccer News Network. This is Hank Alexand once again with my co-host, the ever omnipotent and omniscient panel of soccer experts in New England. We have Sean Donahue from Soccer New England. How you doing, Sean?
Good. How are you, Hank?
Doing very well, my friend. It's good to have you back on, along with our compatriot in misery, Mr. Brian O'Connell. How you doing, Brian?
I've been better, but I can't complain. I'm on the show.
Yeah, that's excellent, man. And Brian's just coming off what he calls a humiliating soccer game for himself. But we won't discuss the non-factor that is your left foot. But when we're looking at the state of the revolution, I think the last time we talked, we were on a bit of a roll, and things were looking all bright and sunshiny and cheery, and everybody was happy. I think that was kind of waiting for the wheels to fall off the bus, and looking at the state of the revolution the last three league games, not the results the diehards were looking for. That's for sure. Sean, what do you say? I mean, how can we even begin to make sense of what's happened over the last three games?
Well, it's all gone downhill pretty fast, hasn't it? Last three games, three losses in a row. I mean, it started in Chicago, where they actually got off to a decent start, getting an early lead, and then they couldn't hold on to that. It seems like they don't respond too well to adversity when they get a refereeing decision that they don't agree with, and kind of collapsed after that in that game. And then Kansas City was a whole complete mess there. They switched up to a 3-5-2, which, you know, we've mentioned before, I think some of us would like to have seen, but you know, the timing on that didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. They have, what, one practice between games there? They're on the road.
Right.
And a lot of time to work on it. So I didn't fully understand, you know, why in that situation you'd switch things up that dramatically going into that, you know, without very little practice time on that. And that didn't work well at all. It was interesting. I was reading an article, I forget where it was, about DC United coming in there and playing them in a 3-5-2, the two teams that have played them in a 3-5-2, and DC walked away, you know, having four goals scored on them and losing two. So, you know, it didn't look like history was on their side as far as playing a three-man back line going into Kansas City where that tight field is. I think they were trying to get numbers in the middle, but it didn't really work out. Obviously, they lost that 4-1. And then yesterday, they were doing really, really well in this game. I think they had complete control of it. You know, then even after the red card, they were holding off Philadelphia throughout the game, and it just fell apart in the last 10 minutes, which is, you know, unfortunate. They gave up that goal, and it seemed like they were pushing a little bit towards the end of the game to try to get it back and get the win, and they were caught out at the end. But, you know, it's bad turn of events there. The defense had been solid, and it's looked shaky over these last few games.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, you look at the defense, you go back to Chicago, and, you know, it's really up until that point, we'd only given up two goals over eight games. You know, granted, you know, a lot of those were in Superliga, but still, you know, a lot of 1-0 victories for the Revolution there, and you know, a tie against Philadelphia before, earlier, and then a tie against Pumas. Was that where Puebla was? It Puebla, and then we
Puebla,
had and we had the shootout. So, you know, I was looking at the defense as a real bright spot to this team, having only given up two goals over eight games after. Specifically after the howler that they had out in Salt Lake where they lost 5-0. And, you know, I don't know what it is. I mean, maybe it's the certain type of players. You know, look at Freddie Ljungberg and the way he just can. For me, he was the real difference maker. I mean, even though he was spending a lot of time picking himself off the ground, but he, to me, he was the difference maker in Chicago because he seemed to really boss that midfield. And so I'm looking, and maybe Brian, I don't know if you'd agree with me, but I'm looking at the midfield as the problem there because you know, if the midfield is able to hold the midfield there, then they leave the pressure from the defense. And then, you know, you look at Kansas City when you had a five-man midfield, and they couldn't do anything in a five-man midfield. It was just pathetic, and you know, no control whatsoever. And I don't know if it's just me with my, you know, looking back through, you know, kind of a skewed view over the last week or whatever it was, but I don't know. Brian, do you think it's – what do you put the blame to here, the defense or midfield or what?
I think – you know, I think you have to give a lot of weight to the way the midfield has played because, you know, looking at the – you know, just looking at Pat Phelan, not to single out any guys, but, you know, Pat Phelan, you know, has been really on and off lately, and more – unfortunately, he has been off in the past couple of games. You know, and just having him, you know, pair up with Shari, it just – you can sense something's missing, and that missing, you know, the thing that's missing is Jeff Lorenowitz, to be quite frank, and it's so telling. And I mean, you know, we were talking about how the Revs, you know, went on a little bit of a run, you know, through Superliga, and you know, after that, you know, after that 5-0 devastation in Salt Lake, you know, they come back and they get a really, really, like, you know, great victory against LA, and you know, it looked like they were turning the tide. They put together a great pair of wins, you know, in Super League, and they translated it to, you know, to Super League final. And, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, Pat Phelan is a decent midfielder, and maybe I'm being a little too generous by saying that, but, you know, when you're paired up with Shalvey Joseph, and when you're used to seeing such a class, you know, central mid like Jeff Lorenowitz, you know, it's tough to watch the team kind of fall flat on his face. And just to go back to what Sean said about the defense, because I think the defense is, you know, equally culpable, is the fact that, you know, I really don't understand the thinking of going with a 3-5-2 in Kansas City, especially with Kevin Olsen obviously not being 100% and, you know, being kind of the reason why Kansas City was able to get that first goal. So, I mean, I don't know. I think It'd be tough for me to say that it's completely the defense's fault, because it really hasn't been. I mean, granted, there isn't a ton of depth in you know, in the back. It's something that Sean and I had talked about last night. They really only have five defenders on their roster. So, you know, when they go a guy down, and you know that person happens to be a defender, as it was with Corey Gibbs last night, you really have to start questioning some of the personnel moves that the team is making, given the fact that there's been an open roster spot for the past 2 weeks with the release of Joseph Niuki, the waiving of Joseph Niuki. And, you know, we've heard that they've brought in some trialists, but you can't give up a player and just sit on an open roster spot for 2 weeks and, you know, expect everything to be great, because, you know, as we've seen these last couple of weeks, these last, you know, three games, is that you really can't take any roster spot for granted. And you really have to have a full complement of players, you know, when the referees, you know, don't go in your favor, and when you have, you know, defenders getting sent off, you know, you're limited. Yeah, you're limited by what you have, and what they have is they have a complete roster spot that's not being used right now. So, again, that's not the defense's fault. I guess it's more of a I'm going on a tangent on the management. So, but just to go back to your point, you know, it's not just the defending, it is the midfield. And, you know, these guys just, you know, with Phelan and Shari, and even Tierney sometimes being put in the middle, it's just really awkward to watch these guys sometimes.
Right. We can see that Tierney, I mean, last night I thought he had some excellent plays where he got back and made an excellent save. And, you know, unfortunately he couldn't do it two times in a row. I mean, he got to the, you know, blocked one shot. It was great. The second time he actually blocked it and couldn't clear it, and that's what led to the second goal. But the upshot is, you know, you look at, you're right. I mean, they don't have the extra defender. You know, when somebody goes down, you know, in the past they put in Phelan or even Niuki in the back line. You know, and maybe they do that again. You also look at this. The injury list on this team is still the biggest by far in the East. It's enormous, and a lot of dead weight on that roster, I might add. But the thing that gets me here is that, you know, you put in a guy, you're starting a guy like Kano Smith, you know, for three games in a row, except for, you know, not this past weekend, but the two games before he got the start. And I have to say, what the heck? I mean, I know you're starting Marco up top as kind of a withdrawn attacker, attacking midfield or whatever you want to call it. And you're pairing him with Stolica, which is kind of working to a degree. And I like that combination. I think the duo there is good. But I don't know if, you know, when you have Kano Smith on the field, it's you're not getting anything for that. You're basically giving up a spot on the field for somebody who could, like maybe Chris Tierney, who's better off at the left midfielder spot than he is at right back, that's for sure. But then you look at, I don't know how to, when you look at somebody like Corey Gibbs goes down on or goes out with a red card, and then what do? You've got nobody to step in, really, except for maybe move the defensive midfielder back into a kind of a center defender role, and then hope that, you know, your midfield can hold them off. I think maybe that would have been a better decision than to move Chris Tierney back to right back. I don't know. What do you think? Anybody?
I think, like you were saying, I actually did a little piece on this today that I put up on the Revs' lack of depth, you know, in certain areas. And you know, the two big spots there, right back and right mid, which fortunately hasn't been really an issue because Niasse hasn't gotten hurt. But, you know, right back, Kevin Austin goes down. You have to take your starting left midfielder and put him there, or you have to take, you know, your entire defense and shift it over to the right. You know, that makes a huge change to the team there when you're doing that. You know, if you have someone on the bench that can just step in and right back and play that role, you know, then you don't have to move around the entire rest of the team to fix that. And they don't. They, like we mentioned earlier, they have five defenders on the roster. You know, Corey Gibbs is a guy who's been injury prone in his career. Kevin Austin's now seeming, you know, have a lot of hamstring problems. It's a tough situation. You need to have more than that to fill in. As seen by Pat Phelan having to play center back, you know, a couple games earlier in the season. I think that's a huge problem there, because if you talk to Matt Reese, they haven't really gotten used to having the same back line all season, because they keep having to switch it up. You know, one guy goes down, you have to switch up your center back pairing. I think Emmanuel Ose and Darius Barnes, for the most part, have done a good job together back there.
Yep.
You know, but then in the middle of a game, you have to switch Ose over to right back, put, you know, Barnes and Gibbs in center back or something like that, which happens way too often, or, you know, over two game periods. I think Barnes and Gibbs actually haven't looked very good when they've been together. For whatever reason, the two of them don't seem to partner up too well in the center. It's just unfortunate that you have a situation where you have these two guys that are working well together, but because, you know, the right back goes down, then you have to break up that partnership as well and further change up everything. And, you know, they really need to go out there and get someone who can fill in for Kevin Austin and back up that spot, because, you know, like you said, Kano Smith coming in there and playing left mid, you know, he used to when he was first here, you know, he was a very inconsistent player, but every once in a while you get something brilliant out of him going forward, an amazing goal or a good cross to set somebody up. I haven't seen that at all this season. I think, you know, admittedly, as Jay Heap says, he's gotten better defensively, but you want a little bit more than just, you know, some solid or okay defense out of your left midfield. You want him to actually get forward and, you know, create something. And you don't get that out of Kano Smith. Now, we've talked about Chris Tierney before. He can put in a really good cross into the box. You know, he has trouble creating space for himself. He has trouble being, you know, a man on the dribble. But at the same time, he has a lot more to offer than Kano Smith does this year. So it's tough to take Chris Tierney, who actually can offer something offensively up there, and then put him out right back where he doesn't really look too comfortable. You know, it's certainly not the position he ever played in college or, you know, going through. So it's just a tough situation. I think the big thing is that, you know, we were looking at this team, you know, all through the year, we said they need another forward, they need a, you know, a really strong forward, and they did. And the verdict, I think, is still out on whether Stolica is that guy. He's certainly shown some good signs.
Scored last night.
Yeah, he's certainly shown some good signs, but he hasn't. We haven't seen enough of him to see whether he can keep it up over the entire season. But so far, so good. But while we've been looking at that, we've really ignored the fact that, you know, this defense is extremely lacking in depth. It's shocking to me that a Steve Nichol team goes into the season. You know, we've talked over the years how the Revs, there's so many drafting, so many defenders, but going into the season with five defenders on the roster, it's just really surprising.
Yeah, it is kind of shocking when you think about it. You look at some of the, you look at this roster, the people that are on the injured list here, and, you know, there aren't any really defenders except for Kevin Alston. You know, last year, I'm trying to remember, they had Chris Albright and kind of in reserve. and then Chris Tierney would kind of fill in as well. So I guess they look at that as an option for them, is Chris Tierney playing left back and then moving over. So, you know, you look at, you know, next week's game, the league game, because we're expecting Gibbs will play on Wednesday in Super League final. That's not a problem because it's not a league game. He can play. But you look at the next league game, who's going to be your back line? They're going to have to go back to Tierney playing left. It depends on Alston, I guess, right?
Yeah, if Alston's not back, then they're going to have Tierney at right back again.
Yep.
Tierney fills in admirably there, but it just, you know, he gets caught out a little bit. I don't think that's certainly not the position that, you know, he's meant for. He's a guy who's stronger on his left foot. It just doesn't seem to take, it takes away his strengths, which are, his strengths are, you know, getting the ball in good space, you know, making smart passes and, you know, getting crosses into the box. He can't do that from right back, and, you know, he doesn't really do that from left back either because he doesn't go forward. So the guy that's good in the midfield, it's good that he has some versatility that, you know, the coach feels comfortable moving around, but, you know, you shouldn't have to be putting him at right back.
Yep. Yeah, and I don't know. I think what, you know, you're talking about the coach being comfortable. I think the coach is way too comfortable with Kino Smith. I think he's gotten blind to the fact of how bad he actually is. And you look at how this guy just, when he comes on, he doesn't add anything into the attack. He's not, he only runs when he has the ball at his feet. And never, ever does he make a run to the far post when Niasse is coming up the side. I mean, I saw Chris Tierney do it last night. I thought it was great. I mean, at least somebody was up there. So, you know, if Stolica hadn't played the ball, it might have fallen into Tierney. Who knows? But at least Tierney made that run. And he has the mindset to say, yeah, okay, I'm going to go there. But I think Kano has been over the, you know, kind of brainwashed by Nickel over the last few years to say, hey, you know what? You don't get back on defense. You got to play defense. And so he's starting to play more defense than he is thinking forward. And, you know, I don't know. I think he's a defensive liability in the first place. I don't think he's that much better than he was. And second, he's not adding anything in terms of the attack. And you bring off a player like Stolica, who at least, you know, is playing in the forward end of the pitch, so that, you know, if the ball gets down there, he can at least hold it up that end for the pitch for a while. You know, if Kano, I'm getting angry. I'm sorry. Kano is back. You know, he's basically acting as that fifth defender or fourth defender, fifth defender in this case, because Tierney's already gone back there. You don't need you. They don't need you back there. They've got four defenders. You know, move up the side. You know, make a couple of runs. Play in the middle a little bit more. Add some support to the forwards. That's what your job is.
I know after that sub, you were not too happy, and I didn't really understand it either, because, you know, to me, when you're stuck with one guy playing forward, which is, you know, understandable when you have a, you know, you're down a man. You got Solitz out there. There's a guy that, you know, can actually win the ball in the air. You're playing lots of long balls out of the back. You're trying to play direct. You know, you're not trying to get fancy because you're down a man. Unfortunately, that's what the reality of it is. And now you put Marko Perović up there, who's, you know, a great player, and I don't think anyone's doubting that. But he's not a guy that's going to go up there and win balls in the air. You know, that's where, when you have the one forward up there, I don't think you want it to be Marko Perović. That's not what his skill set is.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you take off Stolica. You know, even, you know, I hate to say it, but if you're going to take off somebody there and you're going to take off one of the two forwards, I almost think you have to take off Perović because you need Stolica out there. Although, absolutely, you know, bringing on Kano Smith for Perović would not make anyone too happy. But
no, I mean, I think you bring Perović back into the midfield, and maybe
which is what they did to begin with until they brought Smith on.
Right, and then I would have even have gone back to put Phelan in the back line in the center and keep Jose at right back. You know, you've got Shalri and Tierney playing in the middle, and I like the Shalri and Tierney combination. I think that they're a stronger combination than Shalri and Phelan. And, you know, I don't know why. My ideal lineup would be to see Marko on the left, and then and Niasse on the right, and Shalri and Phelan in the Shalri and Tierney in the middle, and that would be my ideal four-man midfield. And then you add in maybe Dubé or Chalosky with Stolica, because I think even Dubé on the field, Dubé's had, what, 4 or 5 assists when he was before he got injured, and he's been out for a couple of almost
still
a
leads the team in assists.
Yeah, and so he's getting to the ball. He's creating opportunities for other players, which is great. You know, he hasn't scored himself, but at least he's that kind of forward player. And it looks like he's got a bit more speed than maybe Stolica has. But Stolica's got that extra level of quality there, so and can hold up a little bit more than Chalosky can, and doesn't get run over like Chalosky does. But we'll cut the rookie some slack. He is just a rookie, and he'll get stronger and he'll get more experience. He'll turn into that. I have no doubt that he'll turn into maybe a 10 goal a season goal scorer, 8 to 10, I'm hoping. And if he does more than that, then that's fantastic. Then we're getting a lot for our money there. But you know, we're kind of going around we could talk about this for a while, but they did terminate the contract for Nayuki, and we all had a moment of brilliance saying, oh wow, it's about time. But you know, why not do that before, when the before the guaranteed contract kicked in? If you knew you didn't want him, just get rid of him. But now you've got this open roster spot. They don't have enough room on the salary cap really to make a move. They've got 2 days before the European transfer window closes. They can still sign unattached players, I imagine. So if anybody that's without a club after September 1st, they can still sign them. They still have the open roster spot, but it's just whether or not they have the money to make a deal. But for me, the real kicker here is that you look at teams that are going out. I mean, even AEG went out to told Dominic Kinnear, go get a DP. Just go get a DP, and we want somebody. We don't care really so much about the type of player who's going to bring in butts and seats. They want to make the playoffs. They want to start winning. I mean, Houston is struggling right now, and they have really fallen a long way, like the Revs have. But you look at Houston, and they've lost 3 really high caliber players in 1 year, high caliber for MLS, but they got Leos Clark, Holden, and Dero, right?
Yep.
So, you mean Dero's a huge loss. That's like losing a DP. But you've got an ownership group there that recognizes the issue. I mean, and they say, hey, go get a DP. We need this to win. You know, and what is the Revs doing? They're bringing a trialist from the reserves, who used to be on the reserve team for Chelsea, you know, a long time ago. And he's played with Southend or something like that. You know, maybe this kid's got quality, maybe he doesn't. I don't think he'll ever see the pitch, because the Revs just don't have the money to sign him. And if they do, great. If they and they find it, make it work, great. I mean, he's got to add some depth there at least, right? You know, maybe he's not a left-sided midfielder. Maybe he can play some other position than left mid. But we've got.
That'd be nice.
It would be nice, yeah. Right? I mean, I think, let's get another left side of midfield. Anyway, I think that, if you could add somebody in there that could maybe support the right side or, get rid of Phelan even. He's supposedly a holding midfielder. You've got Jason Griffiths, who's still injured. Maybe Jason Griffiths can play right back. Maybe Zach Boggs comes back from concussion. Maybe he can play right back. You know, and who knows what? I mean, I don't know what to do about the back line, but my frustration is really vented right now at the management, and their lack of foresight, I guess. You know, with the roster and the shape that it is, signing dinosaurs like Edgars Jankauskas, who played 2 games for you last season, and he scored 1 goal, whatever, it was a cracker, but you need the production like that consistently throughout the season. I don't know why they brought him back, and the fact that they are continuously not recognizing the fact that they need to bring the level of quality on this team up to par with the rest of the league. Right now it's subpar. It is so subpar. And I think they've gotten used to doing it in such a over this way for the last 8 years. They've always been managed to get by, and they've always managed to get by getting the playoffs. It's not going to work anymore. There's more teams coming into the league. And, you know, with that, you know, the talent level in the United States is going to be, you know, dispersed across 18 teams, whatever it is. And then you've got Montreal coming in the year after that, and then eventually they'll have the 20th team. You know, the Revolution need to start stepping up. They need to get themselves in a position where they've got a core group of good players that, you know, are going to be here for the next 4 or 5 years. And then they need to start spending money. They really, yeah, they need to start investing in their roster.
I may be in the minority, but, you know, I don't think necessarily that they need a DP as so much as they just need to start looking at just basic roster management. I mean, if you look at where you know, a quarter of the money is tied up, it's in two strikers who haven't, who've I think, you know, seen one game of action this year, and that's Gankowskis, obviously. And, you know, it's just really looking a hard, taking a hard look at the roster and where the money is going and not being foolish about it. I mean, we talk about guaranteed contracts, and we talk about, you know, how they let go of Niuki after his contract was guaranteed. I mean, that's just, to me, it's just foolish. I mean, it just seems like, you know, while they're looking, they've taken a really passive stance on roster management. And, you know, I don't know what the mindset is. Maybe the mindset is that you can still do the same things you did 5 years ago. Meanwhile, the league is passing the Revs by. I mean,
it really is.
They're really behind. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're still stuck on 06 or 07 where, you know, the pre-Beckham, you know, the pre-DP days where, you know, every it was pretty much who could scout the best. And that's great. I mean, if you can scout, that's great. I mean, you know, if we're getting maximum production from, you know, Zach Schalowski, I mean, which, you know, he's a rookie and, you know, this is his first year and that's fine. I mean, but if you're getting maximum production from all these guys, that's great. But when you have guys hurt and when the guys who are hurt are eating up the most salary cap space, you know, you really have to take a hard look. You have to say, you really have to make some executive decisions, some, you know, aggressive decisions saying, you know, is this guy worth keeping for the remainder of the year before his guaranteed contract kicks in? Because now we're looking at a situation where, you know, you do have a guy like Lee Sawyer, a guy who is from the Chelsea Reserve League. And, you know, he's from the accounts that I've heard, I mean, he seems to be a quality player, but, you know, quality player who played over in England is never going to sell himself short. He's going to command a decent amount of money. And if you don't have the money, you know, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. It's just, you know, this league is a league of, you know, go-getters. And, you know, granted, you know, you have Red Bull who are going out and having three DPs, and that's great. And, you know, if they make it to the MLS Cup final, that's great as well. But, you know, you can do it that way. You can also do it. But if you know you're not going to do that, you have to really put an emphasis on putting your money into the scouting department and really looking at hard look at not just finding players, but also looking at your own roster and saying, is this guy going to be an anchor for us when we have two or three guys go down and, you know, we need replacements. And, you know, like what Sean and I had alluded to last night, you know, it may come down to the fact that they can't really afford another defender, they may not be able to. I mean, they could go out and get a guy who, you know, maybe they can get a USL guy, but, you know, is he going to be any better than, you know, Pat Phelan? Probably not. I mean, you know, not to knock Pat Phelan, I mean, he can play, you know, as a center back, and I think he did pretty damn well against, you know, against LA. I mean, I thought he did really. I think he had a really good game for himself that game. But when you're talking about, you know, at the end of the season when guys are banged up, which happens every year to every team, and you don't have the money to bring in another guy, you know, you have nobody to look at but yourself, and right. that's something that the Revs have just.
And you got to. Yep.
This league, yeah, I mean, they've been really passive this year. I mean, you know, whereas in the past, you know, I think they were playing catch up until last year, and this year, that train left the station a long time ago. I mean, the management on this team, and just the fact that they've carried five defenders all year, and the fact that they really don't have any money to sign, you know, a sixth defender, you know, when guys are banged up the way they've been all year, just, I think you said it perfectly. It's a lack of foresight. It's a lack to look ahead and. This isn't uncommon. This time of the year, guys get hurt and guys get banged up and injuries accumulate. I mean, this isn't news. This isn't news to anybody. And the fact that we're talking about this is just, you know, is this an MLS team or are we talking about, you know, the local side down the street who, you know, need an extra guy to, play defense. I mean, this is getting ridiculous.
Well, at least the local guys down the street, they don't need that to, you know, guarantee this money, you know, for the.
That's right.
but the thing that and you really, if you take a look, take a step back, and you have to put the blame on somebody's feet here. One is, you know, Steve Nichols scouting, for all it's cracked up to be, is not that good. It's been okay.
The thing you have to consider there too is now back when John Murphy was an assistant coach, he was given at least it seemed to me he was given a lot of the credit for the scouting. He did a lot of the college scouting, to my knowledge. You know, back when they got in guys like Dempsey, Twelman, you know, Noonan, guys like that. Now, that was when John Murphy was still around. And
yep.
From what I heard, I can't speak with certainty, but from what I heard, he was, you know, heavily involved in the scouting. So I don't know if, you know, Nichols paid for slack after he's gone, but a lot of the credit to those great guys they got back then was given to him.
Absolutely.
So you don't even know how much credit you can give to Nichol for, you know, those good players they got back then.
Well, and, you know that
since then they haven't done as well.
Well, and they got, I think they've gotten lucky with still you know, Salicio seems to be okay. He's you know, maybe I would call him maybe a late for MLS and for the Revolution, he's the starter because they don't have anybody else. But you know, if we had a Twelman back, you know, I don't know. I think that, you know, you'd put Twelman out there instead of Stolichu. But the and Stolichu may come in at the end and spell somebody. I think they've gotten lucky with Marco. I think Marco Perovic is quality. He's definitely one of the better you know, attacking midfielders in the league, you know, as far as I can see.
And Hank, I think Marco is actually their de facto scouting department when they brought in Stolica. You know, he was the guy that they commented on. You know, obviously they have the Serbian connection, but, you know, it's funny because the more I hear, you know, up until maybe about a month ago, you know, Perovic really wasn't comfortable speaking with the media because of his English. But ever since then, he's been talking a lot about, you know, talking to other guys who play abroad and who play in Europe and saying, you know, MLS is a pretty decent league, which it is. And it's just funny because, you know, talking to Mike Burns earlier this year, I asked, okay, like when you sign a player from, just outline point A to point B. And my follow-up question to that was, who goes out there and looks at the players that are not only playing in this country, but also playing abroad. And the basic sense that I got from that conversation was that it's really Mike Burns, Steve Nichol, and Stevie Miles. And, you know, Stevie Miles is no John Murphy, like, you know, right. what Sean had alluded to. And, you know, even to a certain extent, I heard a lot about, you know, how, you know, Paul Mariner also had a pretty good eye for talent. And when you lose two guys like that consecutively, and you really are looking to add depth to your squad, I mean, I still think that Steve Nichol drafts pretty well. I mean, maybe he's not the – maybe he hasn't drafted at Dempsey lately, but, you know, I think Shalowski has proven to be a good pick, and I think Sinovic has been a good pick, and Austin's been a good pick as well, and Darius Barnes as well. Yep. But when it comes to the midseason signings, I mean, Stolica's really been their first big midseason – you know, first decent. I mean, I know the jury's still out on his performance. I mean, he's done pretty well, but, you know, I think it's almost sad that, you know, you have a guy like Perovic who's almost like you're a de facto scout, who's almost a guy who says, you know, oh, you need somebody, I'll go talk to this guy. And that's the way it appears that, you know, yeah, they have Perovic going out and talking to his old, you know, teammates and, you know, former Serbian national teammates and saying, hey, why don't you give MLS a try? And by the way, like, you know, we have a spot open at the Revolution. So,
right.
You know, they really have to have an infrastructure because the way it sounds, they really don't have any.
Yeah, and I agree. So if you look at, you know, some of the picks that Nichols made over the last few years that are just not working, right? And yeah, obviously Nayuki. I have a theory on Nayuki that I'm going to share with you in a minute. But then you've got a guy like Stefano Sengue, who, you know, was a project player, and they never manifested into anything, right? And then yet Arjanis Fernandez never manifested anything, and Brandon Manzanelli, whatever his name was, you know, they never amounted into anything. And you look at some of these specifically, And Ose has been, I mean, he's calm and composed on the ball. He's a bit of a wild card. You never really know what kind of game you're going to get out of him. But, you know, he's at least got, you know, some composure out there. And I can't believe I'm about to quote Brad Feldman. In his heart, he thinks he's a goal scorer. it was one of Brad's finer moments. But you look at guys like Asangue, never really even saw the pitch except for a U.S. Open Cup game, and then I think he got injured and couldn't finish. And then Naoki, my theory on Naoki is that Nickel went over there, he was on the pitch, and he saw some guy play, and he said, and he asked the guy standing next to him, he's like, who's that guy? And they said, Joseph Naoki. But he was really pointing to Ibrahim Diop. And so they said, okay, we want Naoki. And they got them mixed up, and so they brought Naoki over, not realizing that they had gotten the wrong player. So that's my new theory on Naoki.
And that's the theory that, if proven to be true, really bit them in the butt last week.
Absolutely. I came up with that theory while drinking beers at a bar, so I don't know how much, you know, how valid that theory actually could be, but I'm going to go with it. I think it's a good theory. So anyway, so they've got an open roster spot. They don't have any money to sign. The only thing that they could possibly do is they could sign some kids from the developmental
team. Yeah, youth academy.
Right. And I think that NCAA just changed the rules so that these kids can now play for their clubs, their affiliated clubs, without losing their NCAA status, as long as they don't get paid. And so why not?
I'm surprised they haven't jumped on this earlier.
Yeah. When I made the entire team out.
Okay.
Maybe they don't have anybody. Worth a damn. I don't know. But I know they've got some kids that are good, you know, attacking kind of scorers. I think you've got to bring them on. Bring them on and at least round out your bench, so, you know, and have a full healthy practice squad. You know what I mean? I mean, you got this stuff coming up. You got the Superliga, and hopefully the Revs can pull it off and come back with a win. But win or lose, that's over. So at least they can concentrate on the league for the next few weeks. But, you know, you're looking at the league, and they've got Seattle at home. And Seattle's been playing well all of a sudden. They've gotten up to a third in the West, something like that. So they're up there. And then we got Chivas, not playing so well. And then Colorado, hit or miss. And Dallas has been playing really well. And
so you got
But the thing here is that after the Seattle at home and the lost opportunity against Philadelphia, obviously, you know, the 3 points or maybe even 1 point that we lost, we basically left points on the table there at home. Now we've got Seattle at home, where it's going to be tough to get points against Seattle, even though that they are playing us here. And I don't know what their road record is, but I know what our road record is. It's 1-8-1.
Yes, it is.
Pathetic. And 1-8-1 is not going to get you into the playoffs.
Maybe back in 2002 when 8 of 10 teams made the playoffs, it would, but not now.
Yeah. I mean, if you could count on that fourth spot in the East to get into the playoffs, you can't count on that anymore. You've got to win on the road. And the Revs haven't, you know, Grant, they can maybe win against Chivas if they've got a healthy team. And
they never win in Colorado.
They never win in Colorado. The best they've ever done there is gotten a tie. But Colorado has been playing well. I mean, they had a I don't know if they won last night, but I think they had a pretty good game. I had the results up.
Did they beat Houston 3-0?
They beat Houston 3-0 last night, and again, Houston's struggling, and so you can't. But that was a home game for them.
They did get a little help from a red card in that one too.
Yeah,
although a warranted red card.
Yeah. But you know, you look at teams like Chivas. Been where are they right now? They're at the bottom of the West, so you got to think that hopefully you can beat Chivas, at least get a point out of Chivas. If you can hold Colorado to a tie, they're still only getting 2 points out of a possible six.
And then you and realistically, you're at a point now where you need to win
every game almost.
Seven of nine to have a good shot of making it. Or, you know, win six and tie three. And that's not easy to do. I mean, back in 2002, they finished the season 5-0-1, which would be a great start to getting them there doing something like that. But I think it's a lot harder to do that now, too, because the league's a lot, you know, even if the Revs necessarily quality has not gone up, which I think we can say it hasn't really gone up, the rest of the league has. A lot of these teams certainly have.
Right. And you got teams like Seattle is – You get Toronto, you got Chicago. Let's see what this is. So you got Houston's ahead of you. You got Kansas City ahead of you. And they're even more ahead of you now than they were because they won again last night. And then Chicago, who are dropping down a little bit. And then Toronto.
Yep.
Colorado, Seattle, and San Jose are all within striking distance of the Revolution. Right, Revolution are on 21 points. These guys are all, you know, in the 20s.
Yeah, and I think San Jose holds the last playoff spot with 29. So Revs need to 8 points back, which it's not easy to make up at this point in the season, especially when you got, you know, three or four teams between you and them that are also trying to get there.
Yeah, it's not looking good. It's not looking good.
Especially when you look at the last two games that they played. Obviously, you know, the Philly game and the KC game were just huge, you know, swings of momentum in the wrong direction for the Revs. I mean, those are two prime opportunities to gain points within the conference. And when you come away from both those games with 0 points, I mean, I hate to say it's over, but I think after those two games, it's over. Because if you look, like Sean said, you really need to get 7 wins out of the next nine to really even be just in contention. And if you look at the games where you could swing those points in the East, you know, the last game of the season is at New York. And then you also play Kansas City at home. And then you also play at home versus Columbus. I mean, right. you could maybe get points from the Wizards, but I don't think you're going to get points from New York. And I don't think you're going to get points from Columbus. So I just think if you're looking at those three games where, you know,
even
you could swing
Salt
points.
It's going to be tough to get points from too at home.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, just looking at that and keeping it within the East, it's just, I just don't see them converting those points, especially when they need them. At this point in the season, where their backs are obviously against the wall, I just, you know, I think that Super League is really the silver lining here. And you know, after this, you're really playing for pride. You're really playing to show that, you know, the first two thirds of the season were an aberration, except for that little run against, you know, in Super League and beating LA and getting Super League. So I just think that. Yeah, you know, I'm not saying it's impossible, but it doesn't look probable.
Right. And for example, I look at a team like Toronto. It's the team that's in between the Revolution and the playoff spot. You know, I think they're sitting on 27. Mm. And Toronto has got a game against FC Dallas. It's going to be a tough game for them. Chicago's been playing a little bit better. And it's at home for Chicago, so it's almost like an away game. But, you know, Toronto, they're playing DC United twice. They're playing Houston. They're playing Chivas. I mean, they've got a tough game against Columbus, maybe a tough game against Dallas, maybe a tough game against Chicago. And then they've got a game against Seattle and San Jose as well. But, you know, you never know. Those teams look pretty evenly matched from where I stand right now. And I don't know how Toronto's doing it, to be honest, because they were abysmal when we played them earlier this season. They've gotten their shit together. And I said that. Yes, I did. I'll have to bleep that out later. But the upshot is that they've taken care of business. And they've got a favorable schedule coming up for them. And it's going to be hard. Not only do the Revs need to win out, they need these other teams to lose, and so it's going to take a lot of things going in the Revolution's favor for them to even, you know, get that last playoff spot. And it's kind of sad you think about it. I'm not optimistic when you look at what the Revs have done over the last 8 years underneath Steve Nichol and been managing to get into the playoffs year after year after year. And, you know, this is, I mean, I think if you look at last week, really the games against Chicago and Kansas City, as in, you know, Chicago and Philadelphia, where you had the lead and you couldn't hold on to it for whatever reason, whether or not the referee was on your side or not. The point is the Revs couldn't hold on to that lead. And you know, I look at a soft midfield leads to a soft back line. And, you know, if there's only so much pressure you can absorb for 45 minutes, whatever, 90 minutes. You know, if you're going to play in a defensive shell for a whole half, you know, you're going to be hard pressed to get, you know, not give up at least one goal. And I don't know if that was, I'm losing my train of thought here, but I think if you look at those two games, and then the Kansas City game is just kind of a bizarro game, but really, points we left on the road, points we left at home, and nothing to show for the Reds over these last three games when they needed to get these points to keep their playoff hopes alive. And these were the easy points, and we didn't get them. And I might cry.
So Hank, let me ask you. I mean, obviously we've talked about the personnel, but do you also think that it's also a coaching issue? I mean, I know that, you know, a lot that I guess obviously because of the, you know, the play we've seen on the field and some of the questionable, you know, tactics that we've seen, and also the roster management. I mean, is this a Steve Nichol thing? Is this a Mike Burns thing? I mean, if you're playing Brian Bilello next year, what changes do you make to make sure that this doesn't happen next year? I mean, do you think a coaching change is necessary, or is it more of a product of the roster, or both? If you think about the role that Steve Nichol has in bringing a lot of these guys in,
I think it's hard to say. I think Steve Nichol is in love with his roster, and I don't know why particularly. I mean, he has a thing for Jeff Loreno, not Jeff Loreno, excuse me. He may have had a thing for Jeff, but he's definitely got a thing for Pat Phelan, and he's got a thing for Conno Smith, and I don't get it. I really don't get it.
I could see why he would for Pat Phelan, because Pat Phelan can play, you know, he can play in the middle. He can also play in the back. I think he's trying to do the same thing with Conno Smith almost. I think he's trying to
make. We have seen Conno Smith play left back a couple games.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Yep. I think he's trying to do the same thing. I think if there's anything to be said about Steve Nichol is that he is a lot like Bill Belichick in the sense that he tends to fall in love with guys who can play multiple positions. And, you know, that's great if they can play those positions on a high level. But I think all three of us have seen the fact that, you know, Conno Smith isn't that great of a left-sided midfielder, never mind a left back. You know, it's kind of a coin toss depending on the day, which he's better at, and that's not saying a lot at all. But, you know, a guy like Pat Phelan, you know, has shown a little bit of worth as a center back. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say that he's a horrible center back. I think he's a decent center back. But if you take him out of the midfield, you know, who do you slot in? We were talking about Chris Tierney. And we know that's not his strength. He's not playing to his strength. And I think that's where Steve Nichol kind of falls off the side of the road, is the fact that, you know, you have so many guys who he tries to interchange, you know, from position to position. But that makes no difference when guys are playing out of position and guys aren't playing to their strengths. And, you know, I think he tends to get enamored with guys who can play multiple positions, but more often than not, you know, it proves no value to the team when guys aren't playing to in their best positions anyway. So,
well, I think you're right. And I think, and I'm going to go back to a point. Well, first of all, Chris Tierney, I mean, at least the guy can complete a pass. I mean,
yeah,
you know, so he's by far a better option than Pat Phelan or Joseph Nowicki ever was. And he's got a better touch. Yeah, you know, he's better on the ball than either of those two guys. But the thing about, and I'm going to go back to the beginning of the season. You know, I went to preseason training, and I was shocked to see Conno Smith in the locker room. or not in the locker room, but on the field practicing. And I asked, you know, what's he doing here? And he's like, oh, you know, he's just here training, keeping fit, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's like, well, are they bringing him back? And they said, well, no, you know, he's not even a non-roster invitee. I think he's just here to help, you know, round out the numbers during practice or whatever. And so, you know, I knew right then and there because I could see him, the way he was interacting with the other teammates and the other guys there, that he was going to get pulled back in on the team. And I was just thinking to myself, well, why would you waste a roster spot on this guy? And the only thing is that there's some kind of chemistry there where Nickel feels that he can talk to these guys. He's more comfortable talking to these guys than he is talking to Sestanovic
Mauricio Castro
or you know, Kinsella or
Bedia
or whoever. But you know, he's definitely got favorites that he likes to play, and for some reason Kano was one of them, and it just bugs me to no end. So but if you take that, it's like, so you got this guy, he likes to play his favorites and his favorites suck. What are you going to do with this guy? I mean, you keep him? He's only the winningest coach for the team in the team's history. He's brought the team to 4 cup finals. He's won them a Superliga Cup. He's won them an Open Cup. You know, he's been a very successful coach. But at the same time, you got to look at him and you say, well, you know, if he's so successful, why are we sucking so bad right now? You know, it's because we've got no money to spend on. And we'll go back to the whole roster thing, right?
Sean, I think he's got he's had some experienced, you know, good assistant coaches in the past, and he doesn't really anymore either. And I think that probably hurts him too. I mean, Paul Mariner, you know, what a great guy with experience to have on the roster, an offensively minded guy, you know, to kind of, you know, be the balance between Nickel, who's a, you know, guy who was a defender, you know, a guy that can help out these forwards and, you know, talk to Steve Nickel and actually have the experience to do that. And then you got John Murphy, who had a lot of coaching experience before he was with the Revs. I think he was, you know, around with the Revs too, even before Nickel was here. So you got a lot of guys that could, you know, stand up to Nickel and, you know, have ideas for him. But right now, I don't really see that with the coaching staff. I don't think this is, you know, as an experienced, you know, assistant coaching staff to help Nickel out in the way we've seen in the past. And I think that certainly doesn't help.
No, I agree. I mean, it's tough. I don't understand, you know, and I haven't been to training in a while, but you know, the training, they got these guys running out high school drills and things like that. And I just look at that and I say, is it really necessary at this level to have these guys working on high school drills? And you know, I'm not an A level coach. I'm not a B level coach. I'm not a C level or a D level. You know, and I coach U14 boys, but when I see these guys running the same drills that I'm drilling, I mean, it makes me feel good that, you know, hey, my kids are doing the same drills that the pros are doing. But, you know, it makes me wonder. It's like, well, what's the level of coaching that they're bringing in here? And I, you get back to the whole thing. It's like, it's the league is passing Steve Nickel by, and it's passing this team by. And you know, I look to Mike Burns. I lay the fault at him for maybe not having the spine it takes to stand up to Steve Nickel, to say, hey, you know what? These guys stink. We need to get rid of them. They're dead weight on our roster. We can't do anything with them. He's not adding any value. We need to make a move here. And I look to Steve Nickel to say, okay, look, you know, you're bringing in a 34. Yeah. And you can't get rid of the 34-year-old, you know, 35-year-old Lithuanian because he's technically still injured and he's not healthy enough to fire. You can't fire a guy who's on the injured list, which is ridiculous. It's they should be, if they know the guy isn't going to be able to play, they should have put him on the physically unable to perform list a long time ago, season-ending injured reserve, and get him off your books. Just do it. Get rid of him. And go ahead.
I was gonna say that's another looking at the roster. I mean, they have, you know, excluding Tomlin, they have 6 forwards. Including Tomlin, they have 7 forwards, taking up $1.3 million on the roster. That's pretty much half the salary cap in forwards when you only have 2 of them on the field at the same time. You know, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And then you were talking about left mids too earlier. Where they have five or six left mids, you know, and then they have, you know, how can they have five or six left mids? You know, six or seven forwards, you know, or eight forwards if you include Kololuka, because you know that's the only place we've seen him play where he's, you know, succeeded.
Technically, he could play right mid if he was healthy.
We've seen him in limited minutes at right mid, and I didn't think he looked too good there. I thought it looked better as kind of a withdrawn forward.
Yeah,
but I mean, albeit it's been very, very limited minutes. So then you have that many guys there, and then you have five total defenders. You have one guy who you know can play right mid, and that's it. And then your center mid right now, you have Shari Joseph, Pat Phelan, and who's your backup there? Jason Griffiths, who, you know, just came in midseason and is barely, like, it's just bewildering that they have, you know, that many guys up at forward, and then that many guys at left mid, and then everywhere else are so stretched thin. It's because of that. Why don't you, yes, if you realize the guy's not good enough, you need to bring someone else to replace him, why still keep him on the roster?
It's an excellent point, Sean. Excellent point. It's just, who do you blame? You blame Steve Nichol, and you blame...
No, that's the problem for me, is you don't, there's not enough transparency to know who to blame, because you don't know if is it Burns deciding, you know, who to keep? Is it, you know, is it Kraft saying there's, can't spend more money? Is, you know, you really don't know clearly who's making the decisions.
That's a great point, Sean. That's a great point. Transparency. That's really what it is. Because even in speaking with Mike Burns, I still came away with that conversation just not knowing who calls the shots, who says this guy gets in, and who's there to overrule him. I mean, there's no really. It was never explained to me the kind of, I guess, what I'm looking for is checks and balances system, where, you know, if one guy says this, that a player X is good, and, you know, the other guy says player X is not good, you know, that the dynamic of the player acquisition process just has never been explained, and that we've never been given the full details as far as you know, who's to blame, or who's the point person to say, you know, they brought in this guy, it didn't succeed. I mean, the level of transparency with the Raz is just, you know, non-existent. We don't know. We don't know for certain who Steve Nichol brings in and who he doesn't bring in. And the same thing applies to Mike Burns. And those are really the only two guys we can go by, maybe even to a lesser extent, Stephen Miles. But you're right. I mean, I think you said it right on. I think that point was very well made. It's just who are the people that are bringing in these players? And, you know, if we can't distinguish who's bringing in these players, I mean, you know, I guess it kind of, you know, hides the problem a little easier for the Revs, even though we still don't know.
Well, you know, if you ask Brian Bilello, he's going to tell you it's Stevie and Mike. Steve Nichol and Mike Burns.
Mm-hmm.
And that he handles the more of the operational side or whatever, and manages the PR department, manages the press and all that other stuff, you know. And but when it comes to the players, player personnel, he defers everything to Mike Burns. And you know, you look at Mike and Steve; they're the ones that are the ones calling the players. You know, who was it? It was Jason Griffiths who said, "Yeah, I got the phone call from Mike Burns. He wants me to come up early." And you know, and maybe I don't know, I'm not privy to what goes on behind the closed doors. And maybe Mike Burns is just a figurehead. You know, maybe he's just got that title because he was really a good player for the Revolution when the team started out, and he wanted a job with his team. He wanted to stay involved in the sport and the Crafts, like, to reward his loyalty or whatever. That's all well and good. But I think also this team has been built upon the premise of the Bill Belichick Patriots. And, where, you know, the NFL works on a much different salary cap structure.
Yes, it does.
And, you know, and plus they've got a 50-man roster, and, you know, and it's, you know, it's a whole different scale. It's a whole different money level. It's a whole different mindset. Plus the amount of talent that's available to the NFL, and I think we've said this before on this program, the amount of talent available to the NFL, just because the sheer number of kids playing college football in this country, is staggering. It's staggering, you know, how many kids are, you know, ready to come out and play at a professional level. You know, they can go into a supermarket on a Wednesday when they're down a man or two and say, okay, you used to play college ball, you can come out and play on our practice squad. How'd you like to suit up for the Patriots? And they'll jump at the chance. And, you know, but, you know, you come out and you try to find a kid who can play soccer on a weekend. Say, yeah, you know, we're not going to pay you anything, but how'd you like to suit up for the Revolution? Sorry, you know, I got a, you know, law exam to study for, or I got to go, you know, my residency's kicking off this weekend. I can't make it. Or, you know, it's just there's not the depth of players available here for the Revolution to be throwing $300,000 at a 35-year-old Lithuanian who's not going to see the field more than twice a year.
Or spending half their salary cap on forwards.
Yeah, well, I mean, granted, you're looking at one-fifth of your salary cap is tied up with Taylor Twellman. And
you know, so another nearly $900,000 spent on another six forwards on the team.
Exactly, but it's not really all that good, is it? But it's and you have to take the Taylor Twellman thing is just kind of a – I think it's got to be – you got to look at this as a lesson learned for the Revolution. It's like, yeah, you have a player like Taylor Twellman. He is Taylor Twellman. Nobody has scored – you know, more goals for this team than Taylor Twellman in a shorter period of time. And, you know, he came in and he lit things on fire, really brought this team up to where it needed to be. But you know what? He's not going to play for you. And they need to make that decision this year. And they need to say, okay, thank you, Taylor. And thank you for all the years and the 101 goals. They were fantastic. You know what? We can't count on you to be that guy for us anymore.
I mean, if they really want to do it right, do what DC United did with Brian Namoff, and you know, offer him, you know, find some position where they feel like he can actually legitimately fill, and put him in the front office, and say, you know, if you get healthy a few years down the line or whatever, okay, you can come back. That's what DC did, and that would be, you know, the right thing to do, because, you know, Twelman's done everything for this team. He got injured, you know, going in bravely for a header and scoring a goal for
absolutely.
The team.
You know, and
he absolutely deserves the money he's been getting. It's just putting the Revs in a tough situation. If they were to put him in the front office, get him off the salary cap, you know, do the right thing,
right?
You know, that would, you know, solve two problems at once.
Right. And I don't want to belittle what Taylor has done for this team. I want to make that 100% clear. I am a huge fan of the way he plays and what he's done for this team. And like you said, Sean, and when I was there at that game when he went in and got clocked by Steve Cronin, and that was just the most amazing circumstance of, you know, set of events, because I think he was just coming back from injury from that season too. I mean,
yep.
And you know, you have to give him full credit for the way he played and the work ethic that he brought to this team. But he's in a position where he cannot be reliable anymore, you know, mm-hmm. And for the Revs to continue to invest that much of their salary cap in a player that you might get on the field, it's just not, it's not smart business. It's not. And you can't do it anymore. They've done it for 2 years now. And, you know, after last season, I thought that they would have to, you know, we were all hopeful that Taylor would make a full recovery, but if he couldn't make a full recovery after that 1 year, how is he going to make a full recovery this year? It's just, I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. And I think for them to say, yeah, we still have Taylor Twellman on this team, he's still a 20 goal scorer player, you know, I think they're fooling themselves. And I think it's time for them to cut cords there. And it's sad for me to say, because, you know, and as soon as he, you know, as soon as they let him go, he's going to go sign on with some other team. He's going to score 20 goals. It's going to be like, we're going to all be kicking ourselves. And they'll say, Hank, you SOB, you told us to get rid of him. And, you know, it'll be a sad day when he leaves. And I'll you know, it's going to be Steve Ralston all over again. It's just, it's sad when these guys that are really heroes for the local kids and Revolution
don't have very many
fans. Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to upset them at all. And then, you know, as soon as they let go of him, and they'll say, well, why did they get rid of Twellman? And he said, when's the last time you saw Twellman take the pitch, buddy?
Yeah.
And that's got to be – that's just – it's going to be a tough call for them. And we've been going on for a while. And so, hey, what do you guys got going on?
Well, we've actually been slowly working on creating a new site. We kind of collaborate between the two of us and also a couple other people. The new site covering the Revs and, you know, other New England soccer, mostly focused on the Revs. And planning basically to have the big launch for the Super League of Final. We're going to have stuff like live blogs, previews, you know, post-game reaction. You know, kind of most try to get the most complete coverage of the Revolution you can get out there. on put it up recently. Actually got a story up there today, the first story put up there, but you know, really it's not going to be what you're going to be seeing until actually the Super League final, which is when we're really going to have it going. It's called New England Soccer Today. The domain name is anysoccertoday.com. Now, the story I got up there today is relevant to what we've been talking about. It's about the depth of the Revs and salaries and looking at that. So that's the first thing that's got up there. But, you know, once again, it's not certainly what you see now, not what you're going to see in a couple of days. But it was something that me and Brian, you know, I'd both thought of individually in the past, I believe. You know, Brian can speak for himself. But and then I came up and asked him about it, if he was interested in doing something like that. And fortunately, he was, and he said he thought of the same thing. So we got that going up, and hopefully it will be successful. But we think between the two of us and a couple other people that were getting on board, we can really provide the most comprehensive coverage of the revolution that's out there right now.
That's awesome stuff, guys. Good luck with that. It's you know, there's definitely not a real kind of Rev-centric spot out there. I mean, there's lots of little minor blogs out there. It'd be good to get a nice, powerful Rev-centric blog going. So good luck there. I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Hank.
Yeah,
thank
you. Good. And, you know, so any predictions for Superliga before we sign off?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Tough one. I mean, the Reds have had their streak against Mexican teams, but if it's going to end, I could see it ending on Wednesday. I mean, Morelia, well, they certainly left confident after they had that loss to the Reds. They felt like they were the better team and they deserved to win. And now they're in mid-season form. Now, the Revs have clearly lost their momentum over the last three games. So, you know, something's got to give, but I'm not overly confident in the Revs in this one. It'd be tough to pick against them just because of the success they've had in this tournament. But I don't know if I'm going to be able to go out and make a prediction on this one, actually.
Yeah.
I'll say this, Hank. I you know, it's tough for me to make a prediction, too, but I'm going to but, you know, I'll just say this. Just based on two factors. One factor is that I don't think Kevin Alston will be healthy enough to play. I was talking to him yesterday, and you know, he was hopeful, but you know, every player is hopeful anyways. So you know, I think if he's not in the lineup, and I think if we see you know, a similar formation to what we saw last night, you know, which wasn't horrible. It wasn't horrible. I mean, they did go up, you know, 1-0 on the Stolica goal, but I just think that where Morelia is in the season, where they were when they first played us, you know, as opposed to right now, where they're well into the swing of their season, I think the Revs are going to have a tough time. You know, I think they're going to have their hands full. So I'm going to say 2-1 Morelia.
Yeah, I'm inclined. You know, if I was a gambling man, I wouldn't be betting on the Revs. And at the same time, there's a big hometown fan inside me that says, oh, the Revs can do it. And sometimes that hometown fan just doesn't know what he's talking about. But I, you know, this could go to penalty kicks. That's my thinking.
I just hope it doesn't get too violent because, I mean, we saw at the end of the Morelia game, you know, earlier when it didn't mean as much and both teams were advancing anyways, that, you know, it got a little bit edgy towards the end of that game. And of course, Federico Villar,
yeah,
the goalkeeper of, Morelia now, we know what he did when he was on Atlanta and the Reds played in the Superliga, and you know, he slapped Jay Heath and, you know, among several other things, and got suspended for several games, and that's why he hadn't been able to play until the elimination stages of the Superliga. So, you know, there's potential for this game to get, you know, a little bit violent, and I hope we can at least avoid that.
Yeah, and that's always happened. Seems to happen when Mexican teams come to Foxborough.
It does. Even when the game means as little as a group stage game that both teams are advancing anyways, it happens. So
yeah,
in a final, I can only imagine it'll be, you know, that much more. So let's hope they can at least try to avoid that.
Exactly. I think, if they can avoid that and they can keep their cool heads, I mean, and keep 11 men on the field, I have a feeling that this is going to go to penalty kicks. It's just something in the back of my head saying, yep, going to go to penalty kicks, and I think the final they play the extra time, right?
They play 2 15-minute. I'm not sure, but I hope they do. I hope they do.
They play,
kind of take the legitimacy of it.
Which may actually work against the Revolution. Because I think that the longer that the Revolution have to play in a tie scenario, I mean, we've seen them do it in the past where they've been, in the Super League final against the Dynamo, they actually fell behind in the extra period, and then they came back to tie it before going on a penalty kicks and eventually winning it. I think they'd be hard pressed to hold on to a tie for 120 minutes. It would be 120 minutes.
Yep.
I don't see that happening either, Hank.
Yeah.
Especially when it goes back to, like, look at the last game. The guy, you look at your bench to bring someone on defensively, and you bring on Conno Smith.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. That just shows how you don't have the depth right there. And I don't know Morelli that well, but I'm pretty sure they have significantly better depth than that. And especially when you're in 120-minute games in Super League, you have four subs. I don't see four subs that Steve Nichol feels comfortable bringing on in a game like that to freshen things up and give them fresh legs going late in the game. So
right.
if it does go into overtime, that's going to be a huge disadvantage for the Revs.
Absolutely. That's what I say. So, but it may go. It may happen. And so if it goes to penalty kicks, I think the Revs will win it in penalty kicks. If it doesn't, then it means the Revs have lost. So, and I'm hopefully, pleasantly, I'll be more than happy to be proven wrong on this, guys. If you feel like the Revolution, go win, prove me wrong. Prove all of us wrong. But, the way it's shaping up right now, and the way that the team is and the health of the team and the lack of depth on this team. And when you can field your entire team out of left-sided midfielders, it doesn't set you up well for success. So
I think that's a topic that could be discussed for the left midfielder situation, but we can probably save that for next time.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Well, let's wrap it up then. And remember, everybody, check out midnightriders.com. Also check out anyrebellion.org. They've been doing a good job getting people down to the stadium, and it's actually a really good crowd last night, I thought, sitting there in my lovely seat behind Steve Nichol. The crowd was really good. And, one good bright spot of last night's game was, I think it was Shari Joseph's best game in a long time for the Revolution.
I agree. I think he played an excellent game, too. And I wanted to bring up one point after the game when we were interviewing him and we were in the Super League final. He said, we need to win this because this whole situation, the fans have been coming out for us, and our performances haven't been deserving of that. So he recognizes that the fans are coming out even though the team is playing poorly. And he's fully aware of that. And we know he's complained earlier in the season from what we heard in that All-Star game broadcast that he wasn't happy with it. So he put in a great performance and then mentioned afterwards that he appreciates the fans coming out and that they deserve better than what they've been giving them.
Right, right. And so credit to Shari Joseph last night. He played a great game. I thought it was by far his best game. And so, Shari, good job. And good job for the fans for coming out and showing out. I thought they were loud, and they showed some great enthusiasm. And the Revolution Academy players, the youth development program that they had, a lot of kids showed up for that. That was great. And saw them all, take their little parade around the field. That was nice and cute and all. But, they were loud down there, and that was the important part. And so it kind of rounded out that stadium. And one thing we'll talk about next time also, we haven't really, I don't know if we've really talked about it, but the full stadium, lower bowl seating next season, which is, a questionable marketing decision. But we'll talk about that for next time. So, Sean and Brian, thanks again for coming on. As always, you guys are great. And, check out, give us your new website again, New England Soccer, Any
New England
Soccer,
Soccer
today.
Today. So the website is anysoccertoday.com.
And the big launch is on, will coincide with the Super League final.
Excellent. Yeah, that's the plan.
Excellent. So that's Wednesday, yep. Super League final, September 1st, 7 o'clock start. I'll be there with bells on. And
be there. It's on Telefutura.
Well, I'm gonna be there. Hopefully, bringing the family, and hopefully, we'll be pleasantly surprised. We shall see. We shall see. And so, also check out. Please don't forget to check out the Revs American Soccer News page. It's Revs www.american-soccer-news.com. And that's anything on American Soccer News Net. It's good stuff. Check it out. And on that note, we're signing off. So thanks again, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, Hank.
Soy el matador de los 100 barrios porteños. No tengo por qué tener miedo, mis palabras son malas.